The discussion is ongoing. Some researchers find that people of faith and no faith are about equally happy with their lives. Others say they are measurable benefits to being a believer. My next guest has written a book that avoids that debate by focusing on the why rather than the if, coming at the question from the scientific angle. The book is titled How God Works, The Science Behind the Benefits of Religion, and I am happy to be joined by psychologist David Destino. David, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
Hey, listen, you've got to be brave to title a book, How God Works. that was the first thing I thought about.
Yeah, although I think, I mean, that's true. And my goal in this, right, is to welcome everybody, people of faith and people who aren't of faith. And the idea isn't to argue about does God exist? There is no test for the fingerprint of God. Even if you're an atheist, it's kind of on faith. You know, we can't prove God doesn't exist. Right. And so I kind of want to not argue about that, but focus on how to make life better for everyone. And in your opening, one of the things I wanted to point out is if you just look at believers and not believers, it's not clear if there's a difference, but where there's a difference is the people who don't just say, I believe in God, but who kind of live the faith, who every day as part of their life engage with the practices and traditions of their faith, those people are happier, healthier, and tend to live longer. And the question I have as a scientist is why? There seems to be some wisdom there. And I think we scientists should take that seriously and try and understand that.
I'm impressed that you approach this from a scientific perspective and that you find benefits across various faith traditions. So what are the characteristics of religion that convey these benefits?
So one thing that I look at is not just what people believe, but the nature of rituals and practices themselves. You know, we psychologists spend our time trying to create strategies, therapies, and life hacks for people. And what I've seen in my own work is that a lot of what we think we're discovering has been in use for thousands of years. Yeah. Sure, you know, the people who developed this, and it's up to you whether you want to see divine inspiration in it or not, I can't answer that, couldn't scan our brains and run experiments, but I think they intuited a lot of really good things. So let me give you an example to answer your question.
Okay.
One thing we all deal with in life is loss and grief. And faith traditions around the world have developed rituals to do this. And if we look at how they work, they can be really sophisticated. So one thing you always see are eulogizing, right? We talk about how much the person who's now passed, our loved one, was a good person. And it seems normal, but if you think about it, it's kind of strange. If I just lost a job or I was dumped by a significant other, I wouldn't want to think about how great that job was or how wonderful that person was. It would make it hurt all the more. Mm-hmm. But what we're finding in psychological research is that the ability to kind of cement positive memories of people who have passed is a primary predictor for who's going to move through grief in a more comforted way and have less depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. If you look at rituals in Judaism, like Shiva, right, what you'll see is visiting mourners isn't just something nice to do. It's a mitzvot, which is a sacred obligation. You have to show up. And when you do, you have to basically bring food or otherwise help these folks. And again, what the research is showing us is one of the biggest predictors for how people move through grief is that they receive instrumental support. That's not how many friends you have on Facebook. That's who comes and helps you when you need it. Yeah. And even strange little things. I mean, I'm not saying strange in a derogatory way. It just seems that they're very subtle. Things like covering mirrors, which we see at Catholic wakes or in Shiva or Hindu ceremonies. There's psychological research that shows whenever you look into a mirror, whatever emotion you're feeling becomes intensified. And so at times of grief, looking into mirrors makes us feel more depressed and more sorrow. Mm. And so it's just little things like these that are brilliantly packaged together that can help us meet the challenges life throws at us.
And are there at least these small distinctions among the various religions that you looked at and or among the cultures in which those believers live? That's what you were just talking about, isn't it?
Yeah. So my argument is a lot of the challenges that we face being human, you know, starting new families, trying to become more moral and ethical, dealing with health issues and grief and loss, they're kind of fundamental to life on this planet. And so most religions have ways and practices that address those. Mm-hmm. But some of them may have slightly more effective, from a scientific perspective, elements than others. And so my goal is, in a very respectful way, let's see what we might be able to use and adapt, not taking the prayers or the symbols. You know, I'm not saying we should take things in a cultural appropriation way, but we can incorporate certain elements. If you want to cover your mirrors, that's fine. If you want to set ways to make sure that you all come and pray together when someone has been lost, that's fine. And one of the things we see over and over again in rituals, all types of rituals, is that people pray and sing together, kneel together, and stand together. And what we've found in our work is that simple act of moving together in time creates a social bond between people. We've even shown that, you know, as little as 5 minutes of doing that together makes people feel more compassion for each other. And I think that's one way that faith traditions build community. It's not just saying this is what God wants you to do, but it's providing the tools that leverage our bodies and minds to help nudge us along to follow those goals.
I'm curious, in researching this book, were there surprises for you?
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, I've been working in psychological research for close to 30 years now, and I didn't set out to study the psychology of religion at all. I study kind of what makes people happier, what makes them more moral and ethical in life and more resilient. And ultimately, what I began to find is that the things that I was finding were echoed in religion. And so that was surprising to me. You could say it was even humbling to me in some ways. You know, one of the things we study is gratitude. And if you look across many faiths, the idea of prayers of thanksgiving and prayers of gratitude are quite common. You know, even in the Christian faith, you see this, people usually once a day, families gather and give a prayer of thanksgiving and grace before meals. And what we found in our work is that making people feel grateful by counting their blessings or lots of other ways we do it, how they're feeling that gratitude, they become more helpful to other people. They cheat less if we give them the opportunity to cheat and try and make money. They become more generous. They do all of these virtuous things. And so suddenly it became clear to me that, sure, you know, I can tell people to gratitude journal and they'll do this. But religions have been finding ways to make people cultivate gratitude every day for thousands of years. And so there's been lots of experiences like that.
Do you find that physicians understand the medical benefits of faith?
So it depends. So, you know, as a scientist, I have to say there really isn't any great evidence for faith healing on a large scale, mm-hmm. but we've also all seen things that are difficult to explain. But I think what physicians are beginning to understand is the role that belief can have in helping lead to healing. And I think in lots of rituals, even when we study things, we meaning scientists study things like the effect of placebos, what we begin to find is that if people believe that they'll work, and if there's some ritual element to it, and people trust in the provider, the belief that I am going to be healed actually, for certain types of things, can lead to increased healing. Mm-hmm. And so while I can't address whether or not there's actually divine intervention in healing, I'm not qualified to do that. Yeah. I can say that the power of belief and the way healing rituals work by fostering belief and comfort with the healers, et cetera, mm-hmm. can work to help us heal certain types of ailments.
Are there ways that mental health professionals can leverage your findings without stumbling into outright promotion of religion?
Yeah, I think there are. You know, a lot of what we do is looking at how feelings of community and gratitude and compassion lead to healing. In fact, you know, you kind of see this intuited in some organizations already. If you look at addiction research, right, even in a very secular way, what you'll see is things like gratitude lists, self-compassion, things that help people fight temptation to take substances that are harmful to their bodies. And so what I hope people will begin to do is to look at other ritual elements, ways that rituals and religious practices bring people together to form community. Because if we look even now, you know, with the pandemic, there's been an uptick in deaths of despair, you know, people feeling, feeling isolated and anxious and alone. And there is evidence in epidemiological research showing that individuals who are engaged in religious practice are less susceptible to deaths of despair. Mm-hmm. We don't exactly know why, but I think that's an area that's ripe for exploration and to see, can we use some of those elements in a more universalist way so that we can help people take what's good out of that and apply it to whatever faith tradition they might have.
Religion is a powerful force, and in our world, we've seen that force harnessed to cause real harm. Mm-hmm. And so I come at the title of your book with faith rather than organized religion in mind. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. You know, and the point I make in the book is when I say, let's not argue about whether God exists, let's look at these practices, whether they were divinely inspired or developed by people trying to figure things out. That's up to you. But in some ways there, you can think of them as a technology that kind of leverages our minds and our bodies and affects us psychologically. And like any technology that can be used for good or for ill, it depends upon the intentions of the people who are using it. The same goes for science. You can use it to heal people. You can use it to kill people. And, you know, right now, this year, if you look at research by Gallup, what it's shown is the first time since they started asking this question in the 1930s, the majority of Americans no longer find themselves to be members of churches, temples, or mosques. And there are lots of reasons why people are leaving. Some have to do with institutional failures, like you're mentioning, scandals, abuse, or sometimes they feel just a disconnect in the beliefs or gender discrimination. But most of those people who are leaving aren't becoming atheists. They're looking for a new type of spirituality, something else that speaks to them. And I think that's because they're realizing that in leaving these institutions, they're also leaving behind tools that have helped them deal with the challenges of life. And so my goal in this book is to help explore how those spiritual practices, how those rituals help parents bond to their children, help people facing mental and health issues, how it helps you find more connection to your spouse or loved one, and how it helps you find more meaning in life.
I want to be sure that you have said to listeners what you want them to hear about the topic and about the book.
Yeah, what I want you to hear, I hope your listeners will take to heart, is that for too long, I think there's been a tension between science and religion. And when I look at it, at least when it comes to making life better for people, I think those are two separate realms that should be complementary. And it's by talking across those lines that divide us, science versus religion, one faith versus another, that I think we're going to find more ways to make life better for people. And so I encourage you to check out the book, whether you're a person of faith or not. You're welcome. You're welcome to join us.
Dr. David Destino is a psychologist and professor at Northeastern University. His new book, How God Works, the Science Behind the Benefits of Religion, comes out on September the 14th with pre-orders. Welcome now. David, it's great to have you with us. The book is an interesting one, and I hope our listeners will take a look at it and really seeing how those two dimensions can be together. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air. thank you so much. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift as we celebrate 15 years of continuous broadcasting. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform, and take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and be a part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week, one person for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org, and be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, he was.